When my father of blessed memory retired after 30 years at Har Zion Temple, on his last high holidays, the place was packed and the president said to him, you see how many people came? And my father said, yes, they just want to make sure that I'm leaving. So thank you for being here. I want to start by taking you back to March 1st, 1997. It was my tryout. The parsha was Ki Tisa. It's the parsha of the golden calf where Moses comes down and he smashes the tablets. And I remember what I said. I quoted to you from the scholar Arnold Ehrlich, who in his Mikra Kifshuto gives a unique explanation for why Moses broke the tablets. I mean, think about it. Yes, he's upset that they worship the golden calf, but there he is holding the most valuable thing that human beings have ever had. And I remember asking the congregation, if you came home and your kids had misbehaved, would you take the most valuable thing in the house and break it to show them a lesson? No. So why did Moses do it? Ehrlich's answer is brilliant, but I didn't really understand it until this year. He said Moses broke the tablets because he realized that the Israelites had built this calf and were worshiping it, even though they knew that the calf didn't exist a day ago. They knew that the calf came from their own rings and bracelets and so on, and still they were worshiping it. And Moses thought to himself, what will they do when they see the tablets carved by the hand of God? They're going to worship the tablets. They're going to make a new idol, and I don't want them to make a new idol. And so he smashed them on the ground. What I didn't think about then, because I was young, is how is it that Moses, who goes through so many trials with the people, I mean, this morning we read Korach, another rebellion, and has such difficulty from time to time, how is it that Moses loves the people so much that he's willing to smash what God gave him to save them? That's a question I didn't ask. But I want to answer it with four memories. Because in the middle of the night, a couple of weeks ago, I woke up and I started to think of the four most memorable times in my life that I stood right here. And I remember the first, after my tryout, was in 2002. Let me take you back to 2002, because Israel was in the midst of the Intifada. The Sparrow Pizzeria had been blown up months before. Buses, street corners were unsafe. Israelis were dying in the streets. They were terrified to go outside. And so I stood in front of the congregation and I said, imagine a backpack. And inside that backpack is a cell phone. And the cell phone is ringing. And on the other end of the cell phone is a worried parent wondering where their child is, but there is no answer. Because that morning, that child took a bus to school in Jerusalem. And I said, what would you do to help that parent? Because they're all over Israel. And that morning, people stood up to support the victims of terror all over Israel, and they said, I will give $100, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, $25,000, on and on. And the amazing thing is not just that people stood up for close to an hour, one after another, but that in the following weeks, the checks rolled in. And we took millions of dollars to the state of Israel and gave it to people who thought the world had forgotten them. Let me tell you the next time that I remember standing here, it wasn't so much a sermon. It was after I had been at the University of Pennsylvania opening the new Hillel in 2003. And after I finished my speech, I sat down and my father said to me, is there anything wrong? And I said, no, and that's the last thing I remember. And I had a grand mal seizure and they rushed me back to the hospital here in LA where the doctor said to me, we have scanned your brain and there is an area of concern. That is not something you want to hear about your brain. And they said, we have to operate because if you have another seizure, you could die. Of course, you can die from the operation as well, but the seizure would certainly kill you. And so I remember on Shabbat morning, Eileen and I snuck in the back door and I stood up here and I asked the congregation for your patience and your prayers. Samara was 6 years old, and I really thought I might never see her again. And you gave me your patience and your prayers as you did years later when I stood in front of you without a hair on my head because I was going through chemo for lymphoma. And the constant concern and embrace of the congregation was unfailing through one crisis after another. But the crises were not only personal, because now I skip ahead 8 years to the next time that I remember being on this pulpit that I will never forget. It was after the greatest single moment of crisis and tragedy in my lifetime, which was 9/11. And I don't know if you remember, but this place was packed to the rafters with people crying and holding each other. We didn't know if there would be another terror attack tomorrow or the next day or in LA. We had no idea. The country felt the same way as a group that I had felt as an individual, which is the next blow might fall and it might be the last one. And I stood up here and I didn't know what to say, and so I took refuge in poetry. And I read you the words of Edna St. Vincent Millay, I am not resigned to the shutting away of loving hearts in the hard ground. So it is and so it will be, for so it has been time out of mind, into the darkness they go, the wise and the lovely. Crowned with lilies and laurels they go, but I am not resigned. And then, to a hushed crowd, I read the last verse. Down, down, down into the darkness of the grave, gently they go, the beautiful, the tender, the kind, quietly they go, the intelligent, the witty, the brave, I know, but I do not approve. And I am not resigned. I remember during COVID, day after day, making short videos so that we would keep a connection, so that we would not forget one another. And then, of course, we came back together. And the last The last talk that I will never forget was on Yom Kippur. When, knowing that I was leaving, I stood before you and talked about what I had done right and what I had done wrong and how much I had done wrong and the ways I did, and asked for your forgiveness, which you gave me as open-heartedly as you gave me your patience and your prayers. And now, for each of those, I have something. I have a request, a hope, a prayer, and a promise. Here is my request. Because of that intifada, I remember the outpouring of chesed, of loving kindness, that this congregation did more than any other congregation in the United States or anywhere around the world, because we were so moved by the fact that other Jews needed us. My request is that you not forget that other Jews need you. And the other Jews who need you are sitting next to you. And instead of condemning and fighting and anathematizing and canceling and disliking, remember that the Talmud says we are Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim. Jews are compassionate people and the children of compassionate people. Be kind to one another. You need kindness. So does that person who sees the world differently than you. They need kindness too. There are few enough acts of goodness in this world. Why shouldn't we lead the way? And here is my hope. When I stood in front of you and I said, I ask for your patience and your prayers, you knew and I knew that tomorrow things might change. They might be different. Things change. But I'll tell you what has not changed for thousands of years since our ancestors stood at Sinai. The Jewish community has understood that it has to take care of one another, and it has to create organizations and institutions, whether they be the Sanhedrin of old or the synagogue of new. Support our schools, support our synagogue. It is incredibly important. The next time, God forbid, there is a crisis in the Jewish world, what if the pews are empty and there's no one to say, help us? We need you, and you need us. I cannot tell you how many times people have called and said, I just lost someone I loved. I used to belong to the synagogue, but now I really need you. Be here now. Don't go away. And then my prayer. My prayer comes from what I saw at 9/11, which is, whatever happens in the world, respond to it as Jews. Remember that we have an ancient, a rich, manifold, manifest tradition, and don't let it slip through your fingers. Educate yourselves and your children. There's a reason that we are still here. There is a reason that we have changed the world. Respond out of our truths and our Torah. Be Jewish. Don't hide. Don't cower. Don't be ashamed. I'm not alone in this prayer, by the way. For almost everybody here, your great, great, great grandparents are praying this with me. They're also thinking, what did I sacrifice for? What did I struggle for? Why did I hold on to this if when things get good, the first thing you do is let it go? They weren't rich. They weren't famous. But they were aristocrats of the spirit. And we are their inheritors. And their legacy is ours. And finally, a promise. On Yom Kippur, when all of you stood, I made a promise to keep you in my heart. I have been in this place most of my adult life, and I carry you with me, your stories, your secrets, your blessings, your joys, your losses, and your love. Many of you said to me, we won't forget you. I say to you, I won't forget you either. Or this place, or what we've done together. I understand Moshe a little better now. The difficulties, the fights, the problems, they fade. They fade. They don't matter. And they don't last. He broke the tablets so that his heart could be whole. So with one another, let us be wholehearted, grateful, and bound by love. God bless you.